With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18+ terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
This podcast contains adult themes and language, and some of the things that we discuss may be disturbing to some listeners. In this podcast, we discuss sexual assault, torture, race, and murder. Listener discretion is advised. Please take care of yourself.
Welcome to Fruit Loops, episode 228, Bwiti Binafi, the Garifuna version of Good Morning.
Hello.
Good morning. And bienvenidos, bitches. Thank you so much for listening and being here with us. Fruit Loops is a podcast about true crimes committed by people of color and those who are othered and the victims, because contrary to popular belief, not all serial killers are straight, cisgender, able-bodied white dudes.
What?
That's right. Now, these crimes rarely get any public attention because the news is racist. Allegedly.
Racist.
I don't have an echo effect. If I do, I haven't found it yet.
And we are Wendy and Beth. She's Wendy, a Black Latinx woman. And I'm Beth, and I just happen to be white.
It's just part of who we are.
Yep.
Only a small part.
Just a small part. We are not journalists, investigators, or psychologists. Just a couple of gals interested in true crime. Also, the opinions expressed in this podcast are just that, our opinions.
All right. So who are we talking about today, Beth?
Today, we're talking about Reginald Kimbrough, a murderer and serial rapist who committed his heinous crimes in North Texas.
Before we get into the case, how you doing?
I'm doing all right. I mean, things are going okay. I'm just super busy right now. So yeah, I'm a little stressed out. But other than that, I mean, things are good.
Hey, did you do your taxes yet?
Almost. I'm almost done with my taxes.
Samesies. Yeah. Samesies. Almost.
Yeah. I got one more thing to do. But yeah.
Just one more thing for Uncle Sam. Hasn't he done enough?
Another thing.
You again.
Oh my God. There's this lady on TikTok. She's a Black lady. And she talks about her favorite white phrases.
Oh.
And it's like, why I yada?
She's hilarious. I love those. Why I yada? Another one white people say is, get these chips away from me. I'm not going to have any room for my food. What do you call it? The left? Oh man, yeah. Oh no, whenever you go to a restaurant, and old Whitey always does this, that's why I'm saying this, he if we get there and we get in line first and then there's a whole bunch of people like 5 minutes later behind us, it's like, whoa, I guess we got here at the right time.
that's a good one.
Yeah. And let us know what the whites say in your neck of the woods. Tell us what white sayings you've heard, and we will decide if they're funny or not. All right, let's get into some listener letters.
Okay. Well, hello, angels. Thank you.
What's in that bag, Beth?
Well, we got an Instagram DM from Cedric.
Ah, yes. What's up, Ced?
Cedric said, by the way, I love your Fruit Loops podcast. Big fan here in Florida. Black heart emoji, black thumbs up. I could listen to you all talk all day. Teeth smiley emoji. Especially Beth. What?
Yeah.
Me?
Yeah, girl.
Me? Little
yeah.
Me?
Yeah.
Thank Thank you, Cedric.
Yes. Thank you, Cedric. And we all love Beth's voice here. Aww, especially her laugh. That's my favorite part.
I can't help it.
We don't want you to.
Okay, cool. Yeah. And that's it. That's all we got for the mailbag. So if you have any questions or comments, please send them to FruitloopsPod@gmail.com or leave us a voicemail at
602-935-6294.
And we may feature it on a future episode. But if you don't want us to, just let us know and we won't.
That's it.
Yeah.
Also, no new Patreons this week, but as you may or may not know, if you're new here, or if you're here and you're listening up to this point and you hate our guts, just ignore this part and stop listening. But if you are rocking with us, we have a Patreon community. It's wonderful over there. We have weekly bonus episodes where we talk about true crime news, all kinds of stuff.
Just talk about what we're up to. Talk about vegetables.
Pop culture. Yeah, exactly. All the things. We talk about it all. And once a month, we do a virtual happy hour hangout with our Patreons. And so we just get to chill and talk about the happenings in the world at the time or whatever. So there's several tiers. Go check it out. You can see that on our Instagram link tree, or just go to Patreon/FruitloopsPod, I think.
Yeah, something like that. Just look us up on Patreon.
Yeah, look it up. Yeah, look it up. All right. Yeah. Okay, let's take a quick break and then we're going to get into the story when we come back. Hey, Beth.
Yeah.
What's something besides true crime that you and I both love?
Movies?
Yes.
Bing, bing, bing. I win.
Did you catch my Jeff Goldblum impression?
Yeah.
Yes. And Beth and I have seen many together. Oh, yes. And my favorite part about going to a movie is the magic of it all. The popcorn, the snacks, the drinks, the comfy seats, and just taking it in and getting lost in the screen and the sound. Beth, what made you fall in love with movies?
I just love getting lost in the stories. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you can try to capture that at home, but you can't. You can't.
Not exactly the same.
No. There's always something that interrupts the flow. You got to pause. You got to do something else.
Mm-hmm.
And I love going to the movies so much that I go back to see the same ones in theaters, sometimes more than once.
Oh, girl.
Yeah. And in fact, I just saw Dune 2 again with my grown kids for my birthday.
Again? Yeah. But also, happy birthday.
Thank you.
That's right. We at Fruit Loops, we don't play about our movies. Beth doesn't play. I don't play. So if you don't play about your movie going experience and like going to the theater, then Regal Unlimited just makes sense.
Yeah. Regal Unlimited is an all you can watch movie subscription pass that pays for itself in just 2 visits.
Pays for itself? What? Who? How?
So you can see any standard 2D movie anytime with no blackout dates or restrictions. And then if you want to see a movie in a premium format like 4DX, IMAX, RPX, or ScreenX, your Regal Unlimited membership gets you into those premium experiences at a reduced cost.
Oh, yeah. I see. Oh, wow. And with Regal Unlimited, you won't just save money on tickets. You will also save on the most important part, folks, snacks.
Woo.
The snacks. That's right. Members get 10% off on all non-alcoholic concession items.
You can't see a movie without popcorn. You just
absolutely
can't.
Absolutely not.
No.
Nope. Mm-mm.
So if you're planning to see 2 movies this month, you need to join Regal Unlimited. Sign up now in the Regal app or on Reg Movies. That's REG. Movies.com/unlimited. Use promo code FloopsReg, that's FLOOPSREG, to let them know that Beth and Wendy sent you.
Again, go to the Regal app or on regmovies.com/unlimited and use promo code FloopsReg.
Yeah, let them know we sent you, and thanks Regal Cinemas for sponsoring the show.
All right, we're back. Remind us, Beth, who is the subject today?
Our subject today is Reginald Kimbrough, a Black man and serial killer in North Texas. His actions spanned several years and included both sexual assaults and murders.
All right, so we are going to begin with our Love and Light section of the case, where we say rest in power to those who lost their lives in this case, and love and light to the communities and the loved ones who lost someone. The victims are Molly Jane Matheson, a 22-year-old woman from Fort Worth, Texas. Megan Getram was 36 years old, and she was hiking at the time in Plano, Texas. Melissa Winton is a survivor in this case. Katie Coates is a survivor. And two other unnamed women also survived attacks by today's perpetrator. And again, love and light to everyone impacted by these true crimes. Kimbrough is currently in prison, but it does not bring the murder victims back. And the SA survivors, you know, scars, both visible and invisible, remain as they continue to live their lives and heal and thrive. So now let's get into the setting. Take us there, Beth. Lay down some context, would you?
Okay, I will. So the setting is North Texas from 2012 to 2014. North Texas has a rich and diverse history of indigenous peoples who inhabited the region long before European contact. The first peoples to inhabit the Americas arrived in present-day Texas around 10,000 BCE.
Whoa!
Yeah.
How far away is that from dinosaur times? Just kidding. That was silly. I just love dinosaurs. Anyway, when I see those big numbers, I think of dinosaurs. Okay. So by 1500 BCE, distinct cultural groups had developed, which included the Caddo, Apache, Comanche, and Kiowa tribes. The Caddo people lived in East Texas and the surrounding areas. Their territory included parts of Oklahoma, Arkansas, and Louisiana.
Caddoan peoples established intricate communities in the northeastern part of Texas. They were known for their distinct societal class structures and ceremonial mound complexes. Other groups, like the Coahuiltecan, were hunter-gatherers in South Texas with a more egalitarian society.
Each tribe left a lasting impact on Texas culture. Caddoans excelled in pottery and agriculture. The Comanche ruled the plains with their horsemanship. These tribes shared land, knowledge, allowing them to flourish in different circumstances.
People of African descent, both enslaved and free, played a significant role in the settlement of Spanish Texas. Interracial marriage was legal and common during this period, and the population was diverse.
And allowed to be diverse. There wasn't the rules, extreme segregation that we saw
later on.
So the enslaved population was afforded some rights under Spanish rule, including the right to purchase their freedom, to protest against abuse, or obtain new masters if they were being treated unfairly.
Although Black people occupied the lower end of the castas, the racial categorization system of Spanish Texas, some Black and mixed-race people were able to ascend the classification system by gaining wealth and prestige through labor.
And I should say that that has happened throughout history, that despite castes and oppression, that there are people who do make it out. But it doesn't change the fact that there are a large number who are continuing to be oppressed.
Yeah, and it's rare.
Yes. So after Mexico gained independence from Spain in 1821, the Mexican government adopted policies to gradually outlaw enslavement in the newly established country. However, Anglo settlers actively worked to preserve the institution of chattel slavery in Texas, leading to an increase in the enslaved population.
American enslavers began migrating to the Mexican province of Texas, where they established a society like those developing at the same time in Mississippi and Alabama. Tensions quickly rose between these Anglo settlers and the government of Mexico, which, you know, it was a Mexican province. And
yeah, so
get the fuck off. Yeah, get the fuck out.
But part of me wonders, and don't fact check me on this, but 1821-ish, I wonder if the rumblings of the end of slavery were on the way. And
I'm sure,
at this point, there had been a law to ban the importation of enslaved Africans.
Right. So they're heading further and further west to get away.
Yeah, they're heading away. And there is more effort to literally breed human beings. So settlers in the region eventually rebelled from Mexico in 1836 and established the Republic of Texas. By this time, over 5,000 enslaved people of African descent lived in Texas. From 1836 and 1845, enslavers from the American South poured into this new nation between the borders of the United States and Mexico.
After Texas independence, Black lives were shaped by legal constraints, enslavement, and violence. free Black people struggled with new laws banning them from living in the state, while the majority of Black Texans remained enslaved.
Texas's enslaved population grew rapidly. There were 30,000 enslaved people in Texas by 1845. By 1850, there were 58,000.
Wow.
10 years later, in 1860, the number had increased to about 183,000.
Oh, my God. That's disgusting.
That's disgusting.
Yeah.
Disgusting and horrifying.
Yeah. Juneteenth, commemorating the emancipation of enslaved people, has its roots in Texas. On June 19th, 1865, at the end of the Civil War and over 2 years after President Lincoln issued the Emancipation Proclamation, General Gordon Granger landed in Galveston and declared that enslavement was ended.
However, many Black people in Texas remained enslaved for months and, in rare cases, years, when their owners refused to release them. Many newly emancipated, formerly enslaved people of African descent celebrated their freedom from American chattel slavery at the holiday known as Juneteenth. Juneteenth, Juneteenth, Juneteenth. celebrate with me. It's my favorite holiday. Now, the Juneteenth commemoration has been a Texas state holiday since 1980 and was recognized as a federal holiday in 2021 by Joe Biden.
Yeah, yeah. That was a really cool day.
It was.
Yeah.
I didn't go to work that day, but it was a cool day.
After Reconstruction, which failed 7 years after emancipation due to state-sanctioned white violence, white Texans utilized even more violence, intimidation, and legal means to limit Black suffrage, and passed a poll tax in 1902 to restrict the political participation of poor people of all races.
Texas wasn't the only place to do this. This is just the only one we're talking about in this episode.
Yeah.
So laws requiring segregation of railroad cars, waiting rooms, restaurant, entertainment establishments, and residential neighborhoods also restricted Black mobility and advancement during the late 19th and 20th centuries.
The Ku Klux Klan enacted violence and terror on Black Texans, and lynching became an increasingly prevalent form of racial intimidation. Between 1885 and 1942, there were 468 documented victims of lynching in Texas, the vast majority of whom were Black. That's 468 documented murders that likely no one answered for.
Wow. Talk about a true crime.
Yeah.
So while Black Texans fought against discrimination and repression, they also organized in their neighborhoods, participated in war efforts of the First and Second World Wars, and influenced the larger state of Texas with valuable cultural, political, and economic contributions. That's right. Beyonce is country. And that's that.
That's the end of that.
That's that.
Okay.
Period.
Today, Texas has the largest Black population in the United States with about 4.2 million Black Americans. But despite progress, racism persists, affecting Black Texans' daily lives and opportunities.
Now, some have wondered if remaining in the state makes sense for them. Others are determined to stay and advocate for a more equal and just government. Texas seems to be on a mission to, this is my observation, to diminish the humanity and power of anybody who's traditionally been marginalized.
Oh, yeah, right.
See, I see you, Texas.
Yeah. And Texas was founded by white men who were determined to expand slavery westward. And today, the Texas state legislature is still mostly white and male. In recent years, Texas's Republican-controlled state government has limited how America's history of racism is taught in public schools, restricted voting options heavily used by people of color, and protected the GOP's grip on power with new political maps that diminish the power of voters of color.
Texas is home to, count them, 52 organizations designated as hate groups, including the white nationalist Patriot Front and several chapters of the Proud Boys. Texas also played a big role in the January 6th insurrection, or if you watch Fox News, January 6th spring break party. According to the Department of Justice, more than 60 Texans were among those facing federal charges. Wow. In connection with the Capitol riots / breach. Wow.
Yeah.
That's a lot.
That is a lot, considering how many states we have.
Right.
Yeah. But Black communities in Texas persistently work towards change, advocating for equity, education, and representation for Black people and anyone marginalized.
I should say this, Culture Corner.
Okay.
Equality is everybody gets the same thing.
Right.
And equity is everybody gets what they need to thrive and survive.
Good to know. Yeah. Despite being subjected to racism and oppression in the form of enslavement, segregation, and violence, Black Texans have created culture and community and have improved the state of Texas with valuable cultural and historical contributions. And yet, they don't get any recognition for that.
Come on, y'all. Yeah. Oh, man. Yeah. But let's get into the story of Reginald Kimbrough and his early life.
Okay.
Well, goose eggs. We couldn't find anything about Kimbrough's early life, including his birth date, but sort of based on his age noted in various years and articles and stuff like that. He must have been born around 1993.
Somewhere around there. Yeah.
Somewhere around there.
Mm-hmm. And it's been reported that in 1994, so when he was a baby, his father, Eugene Reginald Kimbrough, and that's K-E-M-B-R-O, and I don't know why their names are spelled differently, but they are.
Okay.
He was convicted of voluntary manslaughter in Dallas County. He was originally charged with murder. He pleaded guilty and was sentenced to 10 years in prison. We could not find any details about what happened.
So the last name spelling thing,
yeah,
I am just speculating here.
Okay.
But even my own father's name is spelled wrong on his birth certificate. He was a Black man born in the 50s.
Yeah.
Beyonce's part of her story is that one of her relatives' names was misspelled in the 40s or 50s on a birth certificate. And the powers that be would not let them change it.
Yeah.
And so maybe that's why.
Could be.
But anyway, Kimbrough's father also has convictions in Dallas County for burglary, DWI. Drug possession, and being a felon unlawfully possessing a gun. So we know that, at least on his father's side, and it would appear that he did not have the best paternal role model.
Right, right. Kimbrough lived in Plano, Texas, and after he graduated from high school, he joined the Navy. So there you go on your serial killer bingo.
Yep, it's there it is.
The military.
There it is, folks.
Then when he was discharged, he ended up in Arkansas.
On his Facebook page, Kimbrough claimed to be a marketing student at the University of Arkansas beginning in 2015. The university, however, said it didn't have any record of him being a student there.
He has been described as popular, gregarious, and charming. One girlfriend described him as, quote unquote, the life of the party. And I don't think he had any problems finding girlfriends.
Yeah, I don't think so either.
Yeah.
So let's get into the timeline. In 2012, Melissa Winton was 18 years old and had just started her senior year of high school. On Friday night, she and a friend went to the mall and walked into a surf shop where Kimbrough was working. He was 19 at the time, and Melissa and Kimbrough flirted a little bit and ended up exchanging telephone numbers.
That night, Kimbrough texted Melissa and invited her to his house. He told her to come in through his bedroom window because his parents were asleep. Remember those days?
Oh my gosh. Remember the days where you were like a teenager, miles away from your home and safety and your parents? I mean, oh my gosh. Yeah. Yes.
Yeah.
I remember those days.
But we all do stuff when we're teenagers.
Yeah. Yeah. When you're young and, you know, free and stuff.
Yeah.
It's just something that young people do.
Yep. It is. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So Melissa went to his house and they talked. And then when Kimbrough made a few moves, she said no.
And that is when he told her that he could get oral sex for $200. Just like
what?
Out of nowhere. Completely unsolicited. I'm pretty sure Melissa didn't even ask.
Yeah.
And so Melissa was caught very off guard and immediately wanted to leave. Kimbrough walked her to her car, acting, you know, apologetic. Oh, I'm so sorry. And then Melissa went to give him a hug. And the next thing she knew, she was on the ground.
Yikes. So her pants were pulled down and Kimbrough was on top of her with his hands around her throat. She became lightheaded as Kimbrough violently raped her. He would tell her to shut up and he put his hand over her face to muffle her. He told her, quote, you're lucky to still be here, unquote.
Terrifying.
Yeah.
So Melissa remembered thinking, quote, I'm never going to see my family again. I'm never going to see sunlight. Like, this is it, unquote. Kimbrough forced her back into her car and they drove for hours. Finally, he got out of the car and she went home and ran straight to her parents' room to tell them that she had been raped. Oh, what an, I mean, the
nightmare.
A parent's worst nightmare. Yeah.
Yeah. And I wonder if he was contemplating killing her at that time.
Ooh.
Driving around.
I wonder now, too.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hi, I'm Matt Harris. Seton Tucker and I host the podcast Impact of Influence, which for 2 years covered in depth Alec Murdoch, who was eventually convicted in 2023 of murdering his wife Maggie and son Paul. That story continues to evolve, and we will cover that. Plus, we will tell you stories of other true crime events that have happened in the South. Please join us on Impact of Influence. And give us a follow on the Impact of Influence Facebook page.
So Melissa's parents took her to the ER where a nurse did a rape kit and then they went to the police. Melissa told her story multiple times to Detective John Hoffman, but quickly realized that he didn't believe her. At one point, he even asked if she kind of enjoyed it.
Yeah, this was a Dateline episode.
Yeah.
And I saw the interview and was like horrified, mouth agape, like, what?
Yeah.
So police then spoke with Kimbrough and he claimed that the sex with Melissa was consensual, that Melissa was just angry that she couldn't spend the night at his house. Kimbrough consented to a polygraph, which he passed, and Detective Hoffman decided that there was no case.
Plano police later said that they didn't file any charges against Kimbrough at the time because Melissa said she didn't want to pursue a case. But according to Melissa, she was not believed, and so she just kind of gave up.
Yeah, and you can't blame her for doing that.
Yeah.
I mean, I know we've said this before, but some SA advocates call the police interview like the second attack or an additional attack.
Yeah.
After the initial one because of what they put you through and just how poor they can victims feel.
Yeah.
Yeah. In January 2014, a woman in Allen, Texas, survived a similar rape, strangulation, and attempted murder. The night of the attack, the victim and Kimbrough were attending a party at a home in Allen. They had not previously met.
A friend later found her covered in leaves and debris outside a wrought iron fence obscured by a line of hedges. She had been sexually assaulted. She also had strangulation marks around her neck, a busted blood vessel in her left eye, a head wound, a cut lip, and chest abrasions. So she was really fucked up. And I think Kimbrough may have thought she was dead.
Oh, yeah. These injuries seem to indicate a violent attack.
Yes.
The detective in the Allen case, Kevin Miller, also did not believe the victim. More of this. And we're in year 2014. So she later said, quote, "He tried to intimidate me in hopes that my story was false and that I would be scared enough to admit that. He told me that 30% of the girls that sit across from me in this room are lying," unquote.
Oh, my God.
This detective should not be detectiving these kinds of crimes.
No.
So a rape victim filed a complaint against him in March of 2017. And we don't know if it's the same woman. And the complaint is against the detective. Is that right?
Yes. Against the detective. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah, this guy sounds awful.
Oh, yeah. I mean,
awful.
Yeah. And the shitty thing about this case and many like it that we cover is this happens.
Yeah.
More than we like.
And this is what, 10 years ago, you know, not that long ago.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And
horrible.
We knew better then. I believe that we knew better then.
Oh, we did. Yeah. When police questioned Kimbrough, he denied having anything to do with the attack, according to police documents. He said his DNA would not be found on the victim, and provided a DNA sample to investigators. It took years for the DNA results to come back. Years.
Years? In 2014? Come on, Jurassic Park had been out for 20 years by then. What?
So in the meantime, Kimbrough was free to do whatever he wanted.
Wow.
Yeah.
So in March of 2014, a young woman named Katie Coates, who had just turned 20 years old, went to spring break at South Padre Island. It's a barrier island on the Texas Gulf Coast known for its nice beaches, white sand, clear water, all that stuff.
Yeah.
And normally peaceful, quiet. And for 3 weeks in March, thousands of college kids swarmed the island during spring break.
Katie met Kimbrough at South Padre Island during that 2014 spring break. She said he was very popular and seemed like a nice guy. And one night, she and some friends went out to a club, and afterwards they all went down to a hot tub, and Kimbrough was there.
At some point, she was ready to leave, and Kimbrough offered to walk Katie back to her room. On the way, they kissed, but she needed to use the restroom, so Kimbrough walked her to the hotel ladies' room.
When Katie went into the restroom and turned around to shut the stall door, she saw Kimbrough coming towards her. She did not invite him in.
Mm-hmm.
And when Katie looked into his eyes, she panicked. She knew by his look when she saw him coming into the stall that she was in trouble. And can you imagine, like, you're expecting this guy to protect you.
Yeah.
And he's the guy who attacks you.
Yeah. Or at least you don't expect an attack, right?
Yeah.
You're having fun. You're doing young people things. You're enjoying spring break. Like, this should be a fun time. And there's nothing to indicate to most of us in this kind of environment that something bad is going to happen.
Yeah.
And I just feel for her and all of the victims in this case. So he shut the door and he locked it, then started to strangle Katie. Katie was terrified, so she just did whatever he wanted her to do. Kimbrough raped her. Katie says all that she could do was try to survive.
After about 15 minutes, Katie got away and ran out. Kimbrough just strolled out. About 30 seconds later, Katie found a hotel worker who walked her to her room. One of her friends was there and asked what was wrong. Another one noticed bruises on her neck.
Her friends insisted that Katie should go to the hospital, and she didn't want to. But she summoned the willpower and the courage to report her rape. At the hospital, a nurse and a sexual assault exam backed up her story.
Soon she was answering detectives' questions at the South Padre Island Police Department, and Kimbrough was arrested. The story he told was the same as what he told police about Melissa's rape. He said it was just consensual sex.
But in this case, police didn't believe his story and found Katie credible. However, the district attorney apparently did not. Later, a prosecutor said that this case was dropped in October 2014 because officials were waiting for DNA results.
Which didn't come for years.
Yeah.
Awful.
I don't understand why they take so long.
Yeah. Well, there was a backlog at that time. Yeah.
That's right. That's right. And Olivia from SVU.
Yep.
She must have donated a bunch of money or raised a bunch of funds to try to help with this backlog.
Mariska
Hargitay.
Something like that. Yeah.
Olivia Benson.
You know,
okay.
You guys know who we're talking about.
Yeah.
Molly Matheson graduated from Fort Worth's Timber Creek High School in 2012. She attended the University of Arkansas studying to be a social worker and hoped one day to work with troubled youth. And as an aside, the University of Arkansas is in Fayetteville, Arkansas, and is around a 5-hour drive from the Dallas-Fort Worth area, which I didn't know. I didn't know that it was so close.
Yeah.
And I was talking to a family member who lives in Fayetteville. I have family in Fayetteville.
Oh.
And they told me that a lot of Texans attend the University of Arkansas because they have an agreement with Texas.
Yeah.
And Texans can pay in-state tuition to go there.
Oh, that's cool. Okay.
Very cool.
Wow.
Yeah.
Thank you for that Arkansas corner, Beth.
There you go. Arkansas corner.
So Molly has been described as hilarious, quirky, silly, devoted, kind, accepting, compassionate, and authentic. Molly met Kimbrough through Tinder, the app for
dating
when she was attending the University of Arkansas. They dated for a while, but broke up. After their breakup, Kimbrough started dating Molly's former college roommate, Megan Lewis.
In the spring 2015 semester, Molly was feeling overwhelmed, and she withdrew from school to take a break. She moved into a garage apartment near Texas Christian University, and she started taking classes at Tarrant County College.
On April 9th, 2017, Molly initiated a text conversation with Kimbrough, and he came over to her apartment. That day, Megan Lewis spoke with Kimbrough on the phone. They had broken up, but were still friends. Kimbrough told Megan that he was at his sister's house working on her car, and he said he was going to have to let her go because he had to run to a friend's house.
On April 10th, 2017, Molly's mother, Tracy, went looking for her after she didn't show up for work. Tracy found her daughter's body in the bathroom of her apartment. There was no sign of forced entry.
I feel for that mother finding her, her child.
Awful. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I found my mom when she died.
Yeah. Oh, no.
And I mean, that was bad, but yeah. I can't imagine finding a child. I don't even want to talk about it. Knock on wood.
Okay. Okay. Molly had been sexually assaulted and strangled. Investigators found a bed sheet and clothing in the washing machine, including a pair of men's underwear. Police believed that the killer tried to cover his tracks by getting rid of the evidence in the washing machine.
But he forgot his underwear.
Whoopsies!
Looking in Molly's phone, they saw that she had been texting someone, but they didn't know who. Molly had known Kimbrough for a long time, and yet his number wasn't in her phone under his name. It was just a random number.
Oh.
Police later surmised that they must have had some sort of falling out at some point, and she deleted him from her contacts.
Okay. The following day, on April 11th, Megan Lewis called Kimbrough to tell him that Molly was dead. Kimbrough acted surprised, saying that he had just seen her. She urged him to go to the police as they would find evidence of him being at the apartment.
On April 14th, 2017, police questioned Kimbrough. He denied having anything to do with Molly's murder. He confirmed that he had met Molly when they were both living in Arkansas, that they had been in a dating relationship at that time, but she eventually moved back home to the Dallas-Fort Worth area. They had lost touch since around 2015, but they had recently reconnected again.
Kimbrough told police that on the night of the murder, Molly texted him and invited him over to hang out. So he came over at about 10:30. He said they smoked some weed, watched Netflix, and chatted. He claimed that they started making out, but she shut him down, saying that she didn't feel right about it, and he left before 1:30 in the morning.
But police had already checked security cameras in the area, and they knew that he left at 2 a.m. Mm. Police began to ask Kimbrough specific questions about the time frame he was with Molly. Kimbrough became upset and said that he wanted to end the interview.
Police took his cell phone and a DNA sample, but they didn't have enough to hold him, so he left. According to police, he left angry.
Police ran a criminal history on Kimbrough and learned that he had been arrested for a sexual assault in Plano in 2012 and in South Padre Island in 2014. Fort Worth police called Plano police and asked if they would hold him on the Melissa Winton case. And they said no.
Okay, another failure
by
those police departments.
Yeah.
So there were two other men that Molly knew, a current boyfriend and a man who seemed to be pursuing her. But police were able to clear them both, and they focused on Kimbrough.
Police were able to get an electricity usage report for Molly's house for April 9th and 10th when they believed she was murdered. It revealed that from midnight to about 1:30 a.m., electricity usage was pretty normal. But at 1:45 a.m., it took a big jump.
I love this kind
this
of
part.
Investigative, like real investigating, you know.
Yeah.
I just love looking at these little details.
Yeah, fitting the puzzle pieces together.
Yeah. This is what real detective work is in my mind. This is how cases get solved. And I love to see it.
Yeah.
So they ran the washing machine to see what that would do to the electricity. And it basically replicated exactly what they saw in the usage report. So Kimbrough was there when the washing machine was started because they knew from the surveillance video that he'd left at 2 a.m. But they didn't have a toxicology or DNA results yet. They did not have enough to make a case yet.
In the meantime, just 4 days after Molly's murder and the same day that Kimbrough was questioned, on Friday, April 14th, 2017, Megan Getram, 36, went for her usual after-work hike at the Arbor Hills Nature Preserve in Plano. Megan was a young woman who enjoyed yoga, and she loved her cats. Hmm. At work, she really enjoyed helping people solve problems using her computer skills.
She enjoyed playing games with a group of friends who had been meeting for over 15 years to play games. I love this. I love that.
Yeah.
And she loved to travel, and her last big adventure took her through India, accompanied by her grandparents. And she just sounds like an incredible woman.
Yeah. She sounds like a woman after my own heart.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. I was like, this has hints of Beth in it.
As she walked the trails, she texted her mom, Diane. Her family did not hear from her again, but nobody thought anything was wrong until Sunday, when Megan didn't show up to her brother Jeff's birthday party. Then on Monday, she didn't show up for work.
That's when her brother went to her apartment to check on her. The lights were on, there was a pile of probably clean laundry waiting to be folded, and it just looked like she stepped out for a minute and hadn't made it back yet. Her brother thought, well, she's just busy.
The next morning, Jeff woke up at 5 a.m. and drove back to his sister's apartment and found it to be in the exact same state as how he found it the night before. Her wallet and keys were on the kitchen counter, her laptop was there, and they found her car parked outside of her building.
Megan's family decided that they needed to call the police. When police looked at surveillance video from Friday night, they saw her walking towards the nature preserve at about 7 p.m. Everything looked fine, but Megan was never seen again.
The next morning, police learned that on April 15th, the body of an unidentified woman was found in Lake Ray Hubbard, which is over 20 miles away. It was Megan. Mm. Investigators were able to determine that Megan had been murdered.
So now let's get into the investigation and the arrest.
As luck would have it, it turned out that police had done a curfew check at the nature preserve the night that Megan went missing. They spoke to some teenagers who told them about a man who was acting suspicious.
They said the man was kind of circling around them in his car, a blue Buick Park Avenue, and he then got out and approached them, asking if they had seen a phone. He said he was at the park earlier in the day and had lost it.
He was described as a black male in his early 20s. Officers weren't too concerned about a man looking for a lost phone, but on their way out, they drove by a blue Buick Park Avenue.
They decided to run the tags, which came back to an older black male that didn't match the description of the suspicious person that was reported in the park. However, it did match the owner's son, Reginald Kimbrough. They made note of it and went on their way.
Going back over the information the officers collected on that Friday night, investigators soon learned that Kimbrough was also a person of interest in Molly's murder in Fort Worth.
With the news of another murder, detectives in Fort Worth realized that they had waited too long. They went ahead and issued a warrant for the murder of Molly. Kimbrough was taken into custody by the Plano SWAT team as he left his father's home and brought back to Fort Worth.
Authorities went public about an arrest due to some tension that the crime had caused around Texas Christian University. If you remember, Molly lived over by Texas Christian University and people were kind of freaking out.
Mm-hmm.
But Fort Worth police refused to release Kimbrough's identity so as to, quote, preserve the integrity of the ongoing investigation, unquote.
Okay. I mean, they had somebody in custody, so... You know, this is one of those where I would say, okay, let the authorities do you know, what they got to do. I mean, they're certainly doing more than most had done up to this point.
The other ones.
But on April 28th, Fort Worth police announced that 23-year-old Reginald Kimbrough had been arrested in relation to Molly's murder.
Kimbrough was connected to Molly's murder through DNA, cell phone records, electricity usage, and surveillance cameras. They actually found Kimbrough's DNA on the underwear in the washing machine and in the shower where they found Molly's body. They're getting so good at detecting DNA.
Yeah, they are. Oh, man. I just love it when DNA comes through.
Greetings from Evergreen Podcasts. We're rolling out a listener survey, and we want to hear from you. The information in the survey will help us gather statistics and in turn make our shows more appealing to advertisers. I know most people don't like ads, but this is one of the only ways our shows make money and help keep their lights on. We promise it will only take a few minutes, but the impact on our podcasts will be tremendous. As a token of our appreciation, we'll randomly select one lucky participant each month to win an exclusive merchandise package from Evergreen Podcasts. Head to evergreenpodcast.com/listenersurvey to help a show and possibly get some free stuff for doing so. We can't thank you enough for the support. Now back to the show.
So when the scammer uses the hypnotic method of building rapport, then they create dysfunctional, delusional reality.
That's how a scam begins. Convincing the mark that it makes perfect sense to hand over their money to a con artist. The Scams and Cons podcast tells you how scams are run. You'll hear how people are convinced to buy fake art, buy machines that print money, or steal your house.
I get a phone call from my wife, and she let me know that they had decided to move all our stuff out. I can no longer do anything about it except go through an eviction.
And you'll hear it from the experts, people who run the cons.
So we go to your bank, you go in and get $6,000 cash, give us each $3,000, we give you this. Uh-huh. You go home, and what you find out is cut up newspaper.
It's fun to know how the trick is done, and that's what Scams and Cons is all about. Listen at scamsandcons.com or wherever fine podcasts are found.
When the toxicology came back, it showed that Molly had the date rape drug GHB in her system.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Okay. That's not something we'd seen in the other ones yet.
I think he had been using it in some of them. Yeah.
Okay. So police connected Kimbrough to Megan's murder using DNA, and the witnesses put him in the parking lot of the nature preserve at the time of her disappearance. DNA evidence showed Megan's body had been in the trunk of Kimbrough's Buick and that he had sexually assaulted her.
DNA also linked Kimbrough to the sexual assault of Melissa Winton in Plano in 2012, of Katie Coates in South Padre in 2014, the unnamed woman in Allen in 2014, and while he was being investigated for murder, a fourth victim in McKinney came forward.
Wow. More than a month before Molly and Megan were killed, Allen police received the DNA results from the rape kit in their 2014 case. The DNA matched Kimbrough, who was already the primary suspect, but nothing was done by that jurisdiction.
Yeah, and this was a month before the murders.
Yeah, imagine. Yeah. Oh my God. Wow. Talk about a fuck up.
Yeah, that's a big fuck up for sure.
Mm-hmm.
All four women, the survivors, mm-hmm. were prepared to testify against Kimbrough at trial.
All right, so let's get into the trial, shall we?
Let's do it.
Let's do it. Okay, so the trial of Reginald Kimbrough was over before it ever started because he agreed to plead guilty to the 2017 murders of Molly Matheson and Megan Gittrum, as well as four sexual assaults from 2012 and 2014, those of Melissa Winton, Katie Coates, the unnamed woman in Allen, and the unnamed woman in McKinney.
In addition to entering guilty pleas, Kimbrough waived all appeals. Kimbrough, who was 28 at the time, was sentenced to life in prison without the possibility of parole. So he's gone forever. Good.
Yes, I don't see any problem with that. So Tarrant County District Attorney's Office prosecutor Elena Bangs said, quote, Reginald Kimbrough is a serial rapist and a serial killer. He used his personality and charm to attract women or drugged them when that did not work. He talked his way out of case after case until his violence culminated in the deaths of Molly Matheson and Megan Gittrum, unquote. So now let's get into where are they now? Tell us, Beth.
Kimbrough, as we said, was sentenced to life in prison without parole, and he is currently serving his time at the Ellis Unit, a Texas Department of Criminal Justice prison located 12 miles north of Huntsville.
The survivors of sexual assault and trauma found solace in support groups. Mental health professionals offered counseling to those who were affected by the crimes. Also, community leaders organized town hall meetings to address concerns. Awareness campaigns focused on self-defense, safety precautions, and reporting procedures.
Memorials were held to honor the victims, Molly Matheson and Megan Gittrum. These gatherings allowed people to express grief, share memories, and find comfort in each other's presence.
The tragedy prompted discussions about safety measures. Residents advocated for better lighting, increased police patrols, and improved security in public spaces. Kimbrough's crimes also led to changes in two state laws related to both sexual assault survivors and data used to track potential serial rapists and murderers, which these are good things. I just wish bad things didn't have to happen
for these things to come about.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yeah. Molly Jane's Law, named after Molly Jane Matheson and spearheaded by her parents' nonprofit organization, Project Beloved, became law in the state of Texas on September 1st, 2019. Molly Jane's Law states that when law enforcement in Texas investigates a case of sexual assault, they have to use VICAP, or the Violent Criminal Apprehension Program, to input information about the reported offender and the details of the offense.
Oh, that's really interesting. That seems like an improvement.
It seems like they should have been doing that, but glad they made it a law.
Yeah. Okay. So Molly's father, David Matheson, said, quote, "It doesn't change anything, doesn't take away the hurt, but we're glad this day is here. Tomorrow the sun is going to come up, and we're going to be thinking about Molly, and we'll think about these girls," unquote. So that's it for the details of the case. Now we're going to talk about our thoughts. What do you think about this case, Beth?
Well, it's really sad, of course.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But I was thinking about this offender, and it seems like, in my opinion, he's more like Ted Bundy than a lot of the serial killers that we cover.
I can see that because of the charm.
Yeah, he's described as gregarious and charming, and that he seemed like a nice guy. Mm-hmm. In other words, a wolf in sheep's clothing, which is kind of what Ted Bundy was.
Mm-hmm.
He wasn't as strategic as Bundy, but he was somewhat calculating.
Right.
He did take advantage of situations where I don't. Bundy may have too. I mean, later on, I was going to say later on in his career.
Oh, man. Yeah, no, don't say that.
Later on, he started to lose control and he started just doing
getting
things.
Sloppy.
But getting real sloppy.
Mm-hmm.
But at the beginning, he was super calculating.
Uh-huh.
And so Kimbrough was able to talk his way out of some of his crimes, like the rapes.
Yeah.
And also, there was that polygraph test that he took and he passed.
Right.
And that indicates to me that he might be a psychopath.
Whoa.
Because psychopaths are often able to pass polygraphs because they don't get nervous like we do.
Wow. Oh, my gosh. She does it again.
Another one.
You always come with these OG true crime like
I just read it somewhere.
And I am blown away because I was like, I was really scratching my head like
how did he do that? Well, number one, they're not accurate. And that's why they're not allowed in courts as evidence.
Mm-hmm.
So like you can take a polygraph and fail it even though you're innocent.
Right.
And you can pass it even though
you're guilty.
Yeah. Oof. So, yeah, I read somewhere that psychopaths can often pass them easily because they just don't get nervous. What a polygraph is doing is testing your
reactions. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, man. Thank you, Beth. I love your ideas. Welcome. I love your thoughts. I love your brain.
But, this case was really frustrating.
Yeah.
If the police hadn't been such a good old boys club.
Yeah.
In 2012 and 2014. He might have been caught after Melissa Winton's attack.
Yeah.
And it disgusts me and makes me so angry.
Yeah.
How the cops behaved towards her and the Allen victim, how they treated them like they were
perpetrators. Fault. Yeah. Like they had done something wrong.
Yeah. Or they were lying.
Mm-hmm.
And so they were trying to get this guy or something. Yeah.
Yeah.
Terrible.
Yeah. Absolutely. I agree with you. I wish we knew more about his early life.
Yeah.
It did. Now that I say that, the car that they found him in was registered to his dad.
Dad.
So his dad wasn't incarcerated the entire time of his childhood. His dad did eventually come home and was in his
years.
Life.
Yeah. He served 10 years when he was a baby. So, he may have been in his life when he was like 10, 11.
Yeah.
He may have been in and out of his life.
Maybe, but, growing up around people who are institutionalized, I can't quite put my finger on what that might do, but
it's gonna fuck you up.
I don't know if it's a wonderful thing.
No,
it's not. Is what I will say. And so I just had that thought. And he said to, you know, be charming. And I found it interesting because he didn't come off as scary or as like a danger. No. He didn't give danger predator vibes.
Yeah.
And his crimes clearly escalated from SA on to murder. And that initial one,
Melissa.
Yes. Came about essentially after she rejected him, right?
Yeah.
She said, I do not consent to this, essentially.
Yeah. She was like, no, thank you.
Yes.
Yeah.
And it set him off. And once he was set off, what he was capable of doing to another person was just like horrifying.
Insane.
Yeah. You know, we've talked about how rape is like, it tends to be a crime about power, right? It's not really about sex. It's about power. Yeah. And I'm curious what inside of him made him feel like he needed to have dominion over another person's body and eventually life, their life.
Yeah. I mean, when he killed Megan, too, was after he had been questioned by the police and it pissed him off. And then he went and killed her the same day.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes, thank you. She puts it all together for me so nicely. I'm over here rambling like, and then Beth comes in with a bow.
Very well.
Thank you. That's what I was thinking.
Yeah.
And it's always been so interesting to me how we come on this show every week and the failures of the criminal legal system are just so massive.
Yeah.
Years for DNA results to come in? Years, sir?
Yeah.
Meanwhile, you know, it's just weird because sometimes someone with no evidence against them can get detained or jailed or incarcerated for way less.
Yeah. We've covered so many of those cases where men have been convicted.
Wrongfully convicted.
Yeah. And they didn't do it. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And DNA is so definitive at identifying and ruling out. That's what it's great for.
Yeah.
And I just wish that more was done to utilize it as an investigative tool. I mean,
yeah, it's just
do
insane.
We need more police bodies, more police guns, or do we need more DNA lab technicians? Hello? Yeah, to keep communities safer, I think. And I also think that, you know, the sex crime investigators, they really, really fucked up here.
Yeah. Terrible.
And, you know, I don't believe I'm the only person thinking this, but they have blood on their hands.
Yeah.
Don't you think? They get an F minus
for sure
for their jobs at the very least.
An F minus minus.
Yeah. For And, you know, just imagine if they had done the work. And the women who came forward initially to report and who were not believed, I am so sorry that that happened to you. To go through the assault and then look for help and just simply not get it. It's horrible.
Yeah.
It's just horrible. So let us know what you think about this case. Now we're going to talk about, what's this part? Oh, how not to get murdered. So if you love true crime and you don't want to die, here's a tip for you.
This segment is not intended to be victim blaming. We thought of this segment because I read somewhere that a lot of people listen to true crime because they want to know what they can do to be safer. This is not meant to blame the victims. It's just learning from other people's experiences.
So this case made me think a lot about sexual assault and what to do when that happens. I think that, at least personally, me, myself, and I have experienced SA and never reported it. And I know that I'm not the only one. And so it happens more frequently than it should. And
it should never happen.
It should never. Yes. Thank you. Whoa. Yeah, she does it again. It should never happen. But when it does, you have to be savvy in order to engage in the systems that are supposed to help you. So there's many tips, but look for a domestic violence or sexual assault hotline or support groups. And the one that I found to be the most comprehensive is the Healthline.com. Healthline.com, you can go to that website or you can call 800-656-4673. And they have a hotline to help you navigate the criminal legal system, how to get medical help, resources, mental health support, and more.
That's awesome.
And they offer local, national, and even international resources. So that link will be in the show notes, but I just found it to be such a comprehensive site, and they have many, many tips. But just check that out. And me, I'm gonna put this phone number on my fridge, and you know, give it to your friends so they have the phone number handy in their phone.
Awesome.
Or et cetera, et cetera. Now it is time to get into the shout out portion of our show, where we shout out any content. We shout out any content by or about people of color, any LGBTQ folks, or anybody who is marginalized, as well as any true crime goodies. Now, have I got a true crime goodie for you?
All right.
And it's content by and about marginalized folks, specifically LGBTQIA+ folks. And the book is titled The Misrepresentation of Queer Lives in True Crime by friend of the show, Dr. Abby Goldberg. Dr. Abby Goldberg, this book is incredible. And I'm really grateful to like have it, because I also think that, you know, true crime, like, it's just going to be so useful for us, me and Beth, to have this information going forward as we're continuing to highlight these stories that are lesser known. But this book, again, it's so, so good. What do you got?
Well, I wanted to shout out, now I haven't watched this yet.
Okay.
Because I haven't had a lot of time to watch TV this week.
It's okay.
But I saw this pop up in my feed today, and I'm excited to watch it. It's called What Jennifer Did, and it's on Netflix. And it's about Jennifer Pan. And if you don't know who Jennifer Pan is, she's a Canadian woman who was convicted of a 2010 kill-for-hire attack targeting both of her parents.
Her parents?
Her parents.
Canada is like the nicest place.
Yeah.
And they have free medical and don't they get to go to college? Everybody in Canada is so happy. Why would you want to kill parents? I don't understand this at all.
I don't know, but you'll have to watch What Jennifer Did on Netflix to find out.
Okay.
And Jennifer Pan is an Asian woman.
Okay. So to recap, those shout outs are a book called The Misrepresentation of Queer Lives in True Crime by, again, friend of the show, Dr. Abby Goldberg. And her co-authors, Daniel Slackoff and Carrie Buist, as well as What Jennifer Did. What did she do and why? I don't know. I need to know. But that is on Netflix. And oh my, it's the end of the show.
Okay. We're here.
We're here. All right, Beth, wouldn't you mind telling the people where they can find us in the meantime?
Sure. Our website is fruitloopspod.com, and we use Fruit Loops Pod for all of our social media. The footnotes for each episode can be found on our website, plus check it out for the different ways that you can support the show. Also, join us on Patreon, where we have literally hundreds of hours of bonus content.
So many hours.
Yes, and you can also support us by supporting our sponsors or by giving us a 5-star review.
Five stars only, please.
Also, don't forget to subscribe.
That's right. So this is a weekly podcast, and new episodes drop every Thursday. So until next time, look alive, y'all. It's crazy out there.
Sounds live?
Nope. Thanks for asking.
You're welcome.
Nope. Nope. Not at all. Do now, though. Okay. All right. And 5, 6, 7, 8. All right. So before we get into... Wait. Oh, wrong thing. All right, Beth.
Sorry. I was just looking for a pen to jot down my thoughts. to add to my enormous takes list, but I can't find a pen anywhere. I guess I'll just forget about it.
Wow. Talk about a true crime.
Yeah.
Or if you watch Fox News, January 6th spring break party. This ain't Texas. Woo! Ain't no hold 'em. Woo! So lay your cards down, 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 down. Woo! So Juneteenth, 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 Juneteenth. Celebrate, celebrate with me. It's my favorite holiday. Now, that's right. Beyonce is country. And that's that.
That's the end of that.
That's that.
Okay.
Period. Period. Yeah. One more thing for Uncle Sam. Hasn't he done
and
enough?
Another thing.
Yeah. You again.
Especially Beth.
What? Yeah.
Me?
Yeah, girl.
Me? Little yeah. Me? If you have any questions or comments, please send them. Let me start that again. Okay.
How far away is that from dinosaur times? Just kidding. That was silly. I just love dinosaurs. Anyway, when I see those big numbers, I think of dinosaurs. Okay. Well, goose eggs. We couldn't find anything about Kimbrough's the detective in 2014. Come on. Jurassic Park had been out for 20 years by then. What? I love your ideas. Welcome. I love your thoughts. I love your brain. Love your brain. My daughter has Murder Club. Actually, it's not Murder Club. I just call it that. It's Black Belt Club.
Oh, but, okay.
I mean, I would just be watching Instagram and listening to Beyonce anyway. So might as well record a podcast. You know what I mean?
All right. Sounds good.
Okay. Alrighty. I'll get this in the drive. Nighty night.
Okay. Bye.
Bye.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
On the morning of August 1st, 1966, shots ring out from the observation deck of the clock tower on the University of Texas campus. It marks the infamous beginning of the modern era of mass shootings in America.
You're listening to Stop the Killing podcast. Join us as we take you behind the crime scene tape to explain global mass shootings and mass attacks. I'm Sarah Ferris, but more importantly, this is Catherine Schweit, the former head of the FBI's active shooter program.
I spent 5 years as the FBI's top executive looking for answers to the mass shooting crisis. I've been at the shooting scenes. I've traced heroic acts of bravery. And I've sat silently and listened to the heart-wrenching stories from survivors.
Amongst this horror, there is hope. We all hold the key to stop the killing. You just need to know how to unlock the door. Download Stop the Killing and be part of the solution. Search Stop the Killing on Apple, Spotify, and all the usual suspects.